Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 I'll read a verse first from Srimad Bhagavatam. Short verse with a short commentary. And then also going to read something else from Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Satyam vidhatum nijabritya bhashitam vyaptim chabute shvakileshu chakmana Adrishyatat Buddha, Adrishyatat Yad Buddha Rupam Udvahan, Stambe Sabhayam Nambrigam Namanusham. Translation. To prove that the statement of his servant Prahlad Maharaj was substantial, in other words, to prove that the Supreme Lord is present everywhere, even within the pillar of an assembly hall, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Hari exhibited a wonderful form never before seen. The form was neither that of a man nor that of a lion. Thus the Lord appeared in his wonderful form in the assembly hall. Purport. When Hiranyakashipu asked Prahlad Maharaj, "Where is your Lord? Is he present in this pillar?" Prahlad Maharaj fearlessly replied, "Yes, my Lord is present everywhere." Therefore, to convince Hiranyakashipu that the statement of Prahlad Maharaj was unmistakably true, the Lord appeared from the pillar. The Lord appeared as half lion and half man, so that Hiranyakashipu could not understand whether the great giant was a lion or a human being. To substantiate Prahlad's statement, the Lord proved that his devotee, as declared in Bhagavad Gita, is never vanquished. Kaunteya Pratijanihi Namne Bhakta Pranashyati. Prahlad Maharaj's demoniac father had repeatedly threatened to kill Prahlad, but Prahlad was confident that he could not be killed, since he was protected by the Supreme Lord. By appearing from the pillar, the Lord encouraged his devotee, saying, in effect, "Don't worry, I am present here." By manifesting his form as Nrisingadev, the Lord also preserved the truth of Lord Brahma's promise that Hiranyakashipu was not to be killed by any animal or any man. The Lord appeared in a form that could not be said to be fully a man or a lion. Om Agyanitim Vandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chakshua Unminitam Tasmai Shri Hrivayam Ukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Bangaya Tegari Yatripa Tamaham Vandeya Shri Gurundari Taranam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nityananda. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Charani. Yavashesha Sadhivari Paschichari Satarani. Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya. Prabhu Nityananda. Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari Gaura Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. So, today is Lord Nrisingadev's appearance day. It is said that there are three particular forms of the Lord where fully manifesting all his opulences in full. One is Krishna, the other is Lord Ramachandra, and the third is Lord Nrisimhadeva. And therefore, it is a very auspicious day. We take advantage of the Lord's appearance to hear a little bit about his activities in this appearance as Nrisimhadeva, where he fulfills many purposes. One of the characteristics or qualities of the Lord is that he can perform many functions simultaneously. With one activity, so many purposes can be fulfilled. If we try to imitate this quality of the Lord, we may find that we're very limited. And of course, these days people call it multitasking. And trying to do so many things simultaneously, I think it's a very common feat which can be accomplished on the computer. Many people try to multitask. But if we actually examine our ability to focus our attention, it's very difficult to do many things simultaneously and be truly effective. We may try to be effective, but usually if we try to do something like that, it's usually a cause for burnout. Why is it burnout? Because we find that although it looks like we're effective at the time or at the moment we're performing them, we find out that many of the details have been missed, and the consequences soon come manifesting themselves. But when we speak about the activities of the Supreme Lord, we should try to understand that the Lord can fulfill many purposes simultaneously and be completely effective in all of them. And there are no consequences, because whatever the Lord does is perfect and for the ultimate good of everyone involved. Just as battlefield of Kurukshetra, so many soldiers killed in the battlefield, and someone may question, why did Krishna request Arjuna to take part in this ghastly war? So many, many things were accomplished simultaneously. Draupadi was greatly offended. Kauravas had to be punished for their offense to such a great exalted devotee as Draupadi. The Kauravas were attempting to usurp the kingdom from the Pandavas. And the Pandavas had to take part in the battlefield in order to protect religious principles. And not only that, but Arjuna's participation in the battle, being the great Maharata that he is, as well as the other Pandavas and all the others who fought on the side of the Pandavas. So many soldiers were killed, but everyone killed in the presence of the Lord ultimately were benefited. They achieved spiritual fruits for being killed in the presence of the Lord. So many purposes were fulfilled simultaneously. And the Pandavas were reestablished as the proper heirs to the throne. This is one example. We can look at many different examples of how the Lord fulfills many purposes simultaneously, excellently. And by hearing these events, these pastimes, Certainly it increases our appreciation of the Supreme Lord. Just as we spoke the other night, when we spoke on Sunday, the more opulences that we are aware of existing within the Lord, the more it increases our appreciation of what an amazing personality He is. Although His supreme opulence is His affection for His devotees and His submission to His devotees, whereby He displays His greatest opulence is that although He's the Supreme Lord, He's very much inclined to subordinate Himself to the desires of His devotees. That is being actually spoken about here, and we'll read a little bit more about it, of how the Supreme Lord Nrsingadev simultaneously upheld statements from many personalities when He appeared as Lord Nrsingadev. And I hope I can present this in a way that's accessible to everyone. It's not too heavily philosophical. I can discuss Leela. I'll try to include a little Leela in pastimes of the Lord. But it's important to know these things. Prabhupada used to quote, in fact he used to say, to know, was it? To know you is to love you. Common saying. To know Krishna is to love Him. But to know Krishna in full is not so easy. Very difficult to know Krishna in full. That's as we said, because He's so deep that the more we know, the more we realize there's so much more to know. Still, we have to make some effort. If we don't make any effort to know Him, then how can we expect to love Him? And, of course, as we explained, I think also on Sunday night, that the best method for knowing Krishna is when He personally reveals Himself. We talked about the nature of confidential revelations that the Lord gives to His confidential devotees, those who serve Him with unalloyed love. And therefore, Krishna is inclined to reveal Himself even to those who may not be so philosophically inclined, who may not be so expert in studying the Vedic literatures, who may not be so expert in academic pursuits. These are not essentially the criteria for knowing Krishna. And in fact, we oftentimes quote a verse spoken by Prahlad Maharaj, about whom we're going to speak today. How can we speak about Lord Nrsingadev without speaking about Prahlad? And Prahlad, in his discussion with his friends in school, he told them that if you can't please the Lord, even if you become an expert Brahmin, or if you become advanced in etiquette, or become vastly learned, nor if you perform great austerities, or perform great sacrifices, chastity, or accepting vows, none of these things can awaken the Lord's pleasure. The Lord is pleased only when one has unflinching devotion to Him. So Prahlad Maharaj said that you know, even if you study the Vedas, even if you know all the verses of the Vedic literatures, it's not necessarily a fact that you're going to know Krishna. Because Krishna cannot be understood. Vedeshu durlabham adurlabham atma bhakta, as explained by Lord Brahma in the Brahma Samhita prayers, that simply by studying the Vedas, one cannot know Krishna. Krishna can only be known when he reveals himself. But still, we have to make an effort to know him. Because if we don't make any effort to know him, and we become so caught up in pressing demands of our life, and we do not dedicate adequate time for serving him, and we oftentimes can become bewildered about, well, even when I serve him, what service should I do for him? What does he want me to do? And we may get caught up in a quandary. Well, I'd like to serve Krishna, but I don't know what to do. But meanwhile, I have so many other pressing demands, so I'll have to take care of those, and when the opportunity arises, I'll do some service for Krishna. But here is one way we can serve Krishna, and you'll become very pleased by that service, is by trying to know him. In fact, it is described to be the most potent form of developing one's love for Krishna. The most potent form is hearing about it. It's the most potent form. When one hears, the more one hears, then when one repeats, chants, and then Shravanam Kirtanam, then there's Vishnu Smaranam. Then there's remembrance of the Lord. And such remembrance of the Lord, of course, is devotional service in a very, very profound and beneficial way to remember Krishna, because that's how Krishna concludes Bhagavad Gita. He says, always think of me, always remember me, offer your worship unto me, and you'll come to me. So we should try to know what makes the Lord do what he does. If we don't try to know what makes the Lord do what he does, then we won't understand the Lord. And we may find, just like Raoul said on Sunday, made a very profound statement that he'd have to be, no one in their right mind would be envious of Krishna. I think that's what you said, right? And then we said, yes, that's true. But how many people are not in their right minds? Anyone who's in the right mind will love Krishna. He says, I am the source of the material and spiritual worlds. Everything emanates from me, and those who are in the right minds, they'll serve me. But how many people, they hear it and still aren't in the right mind? So we should try to be in the right mind. And to be in the right mind means to know, why does he do what he does? Because when we know why he does what he does, then Krishna says, janma kama chame divyam evam yoveti tatvata. Anyone who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance, Lord Nrisingadeva's appearance day today, anyone who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance, my janma, and my karma, my activities, doesn't have to take birth again. It achieves my eternal abode. Sounds pretty auspicious. Simply to know janma and karma, of why Krishna appears and why he does what he does. Krishna says, you're welcome. You can come to me. Come with me and join me in the spiritual world. That must be something that's pleasing to Krishna, is to know why he appears and why he does what he does. So today we're going to discuss about why does Lord Nrisingadev appear? And why does he do what he does? Or what he did? Or what he does also, because he also resides in Janaloka, and he has his own planet in the spiritual world. And those who worship Lord Nrisingadev, who want to achieve their that destination, that's achievable, that destination is achievable by their worship and by their remembrance of him. Of course, generally we think of worship of Lord Nrisingadeva, the general concept that we dwell upon is protection. Right? When we're in danger, Namaste Narishingaya Paladadataya. We really think, why? Prabhupada, of course, instilled that within us also, to chant to Lord Nrisingadeva for protection. Why? Because what do we know Lord Nrisingadeva as one of the most significant purposes for his appearance? Who can tell me? I'm sure somebody can tell me. Yes? What? Yes, to kill, but why did he kill Hiranyakashipu? Prahlad, yeah. Trying to kill his son Prahlad. And what did Lord Nrisingadeva want to do?
Wanted to
protect Prahlad. Right. He wanted to protect Prahlad. Right? That's what we usually think. Why did Lord Nrisingadeva appear? Kaltiya patijanihi nami bhakti pranashati. Krishna says to Arjuna and Bhagavad Gita, declare it boldly, Arjuna, my devotee is never vanquished. I'll always protect my devotee. So, this is immediately, when we think of Lord Nrisingadeva, it's generally the thing that we immediately conjure up in our minds. Yes, Lord Nrisingadeva will protect me. And I can think of so many events in during our days of going out and preaching. I remember the time, I think I told this story once before, when we went in the early 70s, we went out on Harvard Square and the big gang of bikers came up with chains and they stood in front of the Harinam party. And they looked very unfriendly. To say the least. Were you there, Pierre, where those bikers came with the chains on Harvard Square? No. I think Keshava was there. Keshava was there. Keshava always kept a roll of quarters in his pocket. For such. That's why it's a roll of quarters, because he used to fold them inside his. Protect the devotee. Sometimes we have to not just leave it up to Lord Nrisingadeva. And Keshava was a godbrother of mine who actually just departed just a couple of weeks ago, unfortunately. And he had a real kshatriya spirit. But he also had a very, very, very soft side to him. As a matter of fact, he brought me to Krishna consciousness. And he was in Boston in 1972-73 when I was visiting the temple. And he always invited me up to his room. And although he was a senior disciple of Prabhupada, had a lot of association with Prabhupada, he always just treated me like an equal. And I was just like so captivated by it. I was thinking, here's like somebody who's so senior, and here I was a long-haired hippie, you know, coming to the temple with my Labrador retriever, leaving her outside. But he would... Immediately when I would come upstairs, he would go to the window and take some prasadam and throw it out the window to feed my dog. And he'd always sit down and was so friendly with me. And really attracted me. I could tell so many stories about him. But I don't know, should be talking about Lord Nrisingadeva. generally we think that when there's a difficult event, we prayed to Lord Nrisingadeva for protection. And that's what we did, actually. when these bikers came up with their chains, we immediately just made it change the kirtan. Namaste, Narashingaya, Paladaladaya. And the kirtan just went on and on and on for about, the bikers were standing there, like, the chains, big chains. And we were, God. And we just kept on chanting. We didn't know what else to do. And they went away. Don't know why, but, I mean, I guess maybe we do know why, but they went away. The Prabhupada told us also, I think it was when we started chanting the Nrisimha prayers, Prabhupada was, I think, leaving America, he's flying to Asia, and the devotee said, Srila Prabhupada, who will protect us when you're not here? And Prabhupada said, from today on, you should chant this prayer. And he wrote down on a piece of paper, Namaste Narasimhaya Paladalada Narayana. And he gave the paper to the devotees, and he told all the devotees how to chant the Nrisimha prayer. And from that day on, we started chanting the Nrisimha prayers every day. It was before I joined, actually, but just a little bit before I joined. So, generally we think of Lord Nrisimhadeva as the Lord who gives protection to his devotees. And that is certainly one of the purposes that he fulfills. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a verse, Ete Changsa Kala Pungsa Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam Indrari Vakyulam Lokam Ridhyanti Yuge Yuge. Where all of the incarnations which are described in that chapter of the Bhagavatam, they're either portions of the Supreme Lord or plenary portions of the Supreme Lord. And all of them appear whenever there are disturbances created by the atheist. The Lord appears to protect his devotees. So, he says in Bhagavad Gita, Paratranaya sadunam vinashaya jivaskrita dharmastam ksapadartaya. He protects. He protects in order to protect my devotees, annihilate the Mariskins, and protect religious principles. I advent myself again and again, millennium after millennium. So this is an easy way to remember Lord Nrisimhadeva in terms of how he gives protection to the devotees. But we're going to talk about today, and I didn't expect to introduce the topic with such a long introduction, but I was trying to somehow impress the importance of understanding all the different reasons why Lord Nrisimhadeva appeared. Because it's not just to protect Prahlad. And in fact, you're going to hear something today spoken by Prahlad to Narada Muni, where he's going to give all the other reasons why Lord Nrisimhadeva appeared, and he's going to deny that he didn't come to protect me because I'm worthless. So Prahlad Maharaj, in the statement of Brihad Bhagavatamrita, which we're going to read, one verse, he's going to give many other reasons, and also, but they'll be in the commentary, which is by Sanatan Goswami, who is also the compiler of Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Brihad Bhagavatamrita is also, it's like Srimad Bhagavatam, Pastimes of the Lord. It was spoken by Parikshit Maharaj, actually. When Maharaj Parikshit, as we know, he was cursed to die by the bite of a snake bird. He had 7 days to live. So he heard the whole Srimad Bhagavatam for 7 days and seven nights. And just before the snake bird was appear, his mother, Uttara, came to him. And she asked him, what did you hear? He didn't have 7 days, seven nights to tell her. So he gave a summary of everything he heard of the Bhagavatam. And that summary is Brihad Bhagavatamrita. So in this Brihad Bhagavatamrita, which was written by Sanatana Goswami, he has given us this conversation that took place between Parikshit Maharaj and his mother Uttara. She wanted to know. Please, she said, please don't leave without giving me the nectar. Because he was cursed to die. And And Pariksit Maharaj is we know he had the potency. He could have counteracted the curse of Sringi, the son of the Shamik Rishi. But Pariksit Maharaj didn't want to counteract the curse. He accepted it as the will of the Lord. And therefore, the only thing he was interested about when he was cursed is how to inquire from his spiritual master. He said, what is the duty of a man who's about to die? And that Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken to him by Shukadeva Goswami. And then, after he heard Srimad Bhagavatam, and just before he was bitten by the snake bird, Uttara came and said, please share with me what you've... Don't depart from this world without sharing me the realizations you got from Shukadeva Goswami. That is Brihad Bhagavatamrita. So, here in this one verse in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, is when Narada Muni goes to... Well, first, before Prahlad, he goes to Lord Shiva. Because Narada Muni is looking for the greatest recipient of Krishna's mercy. Very, very eager to find who is the greatest recipient of Krishna's mercy. So he goes to one from one devotee, and he's told this is the greatest recipient of Krishna's mercy. But when he goes to that devotee, the devotee, out of his natural humility, the devotee always thinks that, actually, I'm not qualified for Krishna's mercy, but there's somebody who's better than I am. Because that's how a devotee thinks. A devotee never thinks, I'm the greatest recipient of Krishna's mercy. You found me. That's not a devotee. One of the most attractive qualities or characteristics of a devotee is their humility. They actually think themselves unqualified. And because they think themselves so unqualified, that's how they get Krishna's mercy. Because they think themselves so unqualified that they're so exclusively dependent on Krishna. Because if I look at my own qualifications, what can I do? I can't do anything. So because a devotee naturally thinks that way, he becomes a recipient of Krishna's mercy. So Narada Muni was going from one devotee to the next. And he was saying, I heard you're the greatest recipient of Krishna's mercy. And each devotee was telling, oh no. And he explained why they're not the recipients of Krishna's mercy. And then he immediately, after explaining all the reasons, they would say, but if you go to this devotee, you'll find that definitely he is much greater, much more qualified than I am. That's how a devotee thinks. He always sees somebody more qualified than him. He's not like Duryodhana, who was told to go throughout the kingdom to see if you can find anybody more qualified than you, and Duryodhana comes back and says, sorry, I couldn't find anybody. And when Yudhisthira Maharaj was asked, Yudhisthira Maharaj came back saying, I can't find anybody who's less qualified than I am. That's how he saw it. And that was his qualification. Stark contrast between two personalities. And therefore, of course, Yudhisthira Maharaj, Krishna became his messenger. Krishna became his servant. There is a verse in the Bhagavatam which states about Yudhisthira Maharaj. He says, I could see that Krishna is so merciful to you because not only is he your guru, your god, the head of your family, but I see you're very fortunate. You have bhakti. Why? Because although he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he's become your servant. He's your messenger. He went on your behalf to the Kauravas and with your message. So that's the mercy that Yudhisthira Maharaj got because he didn't think himself qualified. So Narada Muni went to Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva explained why he wasn't qualified, and he sent him to Prahlad. He said, you go to Prahlad. If you go to Prahlad, you'll see there is a Vaishnava who's so very qualified. And he explained all the reasons. And now Narada Muni goes to Prahlad, and Prahlad is going to explain to him so many examples of how he's not qualified. But let's try to stick with this one point that we're discussing today. And that is, he's going to give all the reasons why Lord Nrisimhadeva appeared without including one of them to protect me. He's going to give all the other reasons. So he says, he said, well, I'm going to stop right with that point. Furthermore, Sriman Nrisimha performed his pastimes not to favor me, but to protect the demigods, his devotees, and to deliver two of his eternal servants. Okay, so here's another reason that Prahlad's giving. I'll come back to this. There's no commentary. But in the next verse he says, he also wished to uphold the truth of the words of Brahma and of others, such as Brahma's sons, and fully display the greatness of devotional service. These were the only reasons for his pastimes. So Prahlad Maharaj is going to say, he didn't come to protect me, to favor me. He said he came to protect the demigods, who are his devotees. I'm not his devotee, he's thinking. And to deliver two of his eternal servants. Anyone know who those two eternal servants were? Yes. Jayavijaya. So I'm going to read the commentary here, and we'll speak a little bit from the commentary. The personality of Godhead assumed his amazing half-lion, half-man form to save Prahlad from Hiranyakashipu. The most terrible, this is the commentary of Sanatana Goswami. He knows that he came to save Prahlad, although Prahlad is saying, no, he didn't come for me. But Sanatana Goswami knows that, yes, this is certainly one of the, if not the most important reason. Personality of Godhead assumed his amazing half-lion, half-man form to save Prahlad from Hiranyakashipu, the most terrible opponent of Lord Vishnu's devotional service. Isn't this evidence enough that he favors Prahlad? Prahlad replies, the Supreme Lord's appearance as Nrisimha and his disposing of Hiranyakashipu served other purposes. The Lord enacted this pastime to protect Indra and the other demigods who were his faithful devotees. Because one of the reasons, or one of the events that happened, is after Hiranyakashipu performed his severe austerities, for I don't remember the length of time he stood on his toes, and it was a long time, and it became so powerful that the universe actually became filled with darkness. And the demigods, just as like we were, starts misbehaving. Excuse me. It doesn't like to be inactive. What were we saying? Yes, the universe was filled. Thank you. The universe was filled with darkness, and the demigods were very fearful. And therefore, the demigods approached Lord Brahma, and Lord Brahma then responded to the concerns of the demigods, and then he appeared before Hiranyakashipu. And he was also pleased by the austerities that Hiranyakashipu performed. But at first, when he went to that place, he couldn't find Hiranyakashipu because he had been standing for so long that an anthill had grown up around his body and actually had eaten all his flesh, muscles, and everything. And he was maintaining his life airs in his bones. And the anthill had appeared around him, and Brahma could barely find him, and finally he saw him. Whatever was exposed on top of the anthill, He took the nectar from his kambandalo and then restored Hiranyakashipu's body. And of course, as we know, Hiranyakashipu asked for benedictions. I think it's important. I want to read the benedictions because they are connected. And everybody probably knows a lot of them. I bet you know some of the benedictions. You know some of the benedictions? A benediction? You don't know what a benediction means? What?
It means that wishes.
Yes.
So I mean, one of them I think was I can't be killed in the daytime or the nighttime.
Mm-hmm.
I can't be killed by human or animal.
Yes.
I can't be killed inside or outside.
Yes. What's that?
I think those
were
some of them.
Yes, there are definitely some of them. There's more. There's more. You know, now you know what benediction is?
Yes.
Yes. Do you know more of them?
No.
So either day or night, inside, outside. What was the other one you said?
Human or animal.
Human or animal, yes. Okay. So, he said, these are all of them. Oh, my Lord, O best of the givers of benediction, if you will kindly grant me the benediction I desire, please let me not meet death from any of the living entities created by you. None of the living entities created by Brahma. Grant me that I not die within any residence or outside any residence during the daytime or at night. So far you got them all. Nor on the ground or in the sky. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Where was it? If it wasn't on the ground or in the sky? Do you remember? So Lord Nrisimhadeva's lap. Right? Okay. Grant me that my death not be brought by any being other than those created by you, nor by any weapon, nor by any human being or animal. Grant me that I not meet death from any entity, living or non-living. Grant me further that I not be killed by any demigod or demon or by any great snake from the lower planets. Since no one can kill you in the battlefield, you have no competitor. Therefore, grant me the benediction that I too may have no rival. Give me sole lordship over all living entities and presiding deities, and give me all the glories obtained by that position. Furthermore, give me all the mystic powers attained by long austerities and the practice of yoga, for these cannot be lost at any time. So, Lord Brahma said, okay, you can have them all. Of course, later, Lord Nrisimhadeva said, don't do this again. Definitely told him. He said, look, don't. This is too much. Look how much pain, suffering. No benedictions like this in the future. So he got the benediction from Lord Brahma. And then, of course, as soon as he got the benediction, he went to the heavenly planets. He took over Indra's palace. And he subordinated all the demigods and the entire universe to him. They all had to come before him, bow down before him, serve him and worship him. The only deities that did not do it were Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva. Every other demigod had to come completely subordinated to him. So you can imagine what kind of a situation Indra was in. And all the demigods. They've been all exiled from their residence. They're all forced into submission to Hiranyakashipu. Imagine. I mean, what a plight, if you think about it. Imagine being a devotee, a worshipper of Lord Vishnu. Of course, Hiranyakashipu's mentality was he's thinking that if I can subordinate all those who worship sacrifice to Vishnu, I can starve Vishnu. Because Vishnu thrives off the performance of sacrifice by his devotees. So I'll stop all sacrifices. He'll just shrivel up and die. So that's how he was thinking. So Prahlad Maharaj is saying here, one of the reasons why Lord Nrisimhadeva appeared was for Indra. I'm going to have to... Everyone. Oh no, okay, it's cooperating now. So the Lord enacted his pastime to protect Indra and the other demigods, who are his faithful devotees. He also descended in this form, to free his two Vaikuntha associates, Jai and Vijay, from the curse of Sanak and his brothers. Now, anyone know that story? Anyone want to tell me as much as they know of that story? Yes? What can you tell me?
Wanted to meet Krishna, and they didn't let him for, I don't remember the reason, so they were cursed.
Yes. Yeah, the four Kumaras. Four Kumaras are the firstborn sons of Lord Brahma. They're the first created beings in the universe. The oldest beings in the universe, besides Brahma. The first Lord Brahma created the four Kumaras and he asked them to procreate. He said, "What? We don't want to do that." He refused the order of their father. He said, "We want to live a life of renunciation." Lord Brahma became angry. And from his anger, manifested Bodhisattva. You know. That's, of course, in the Bhagavatam. But the four Kumaras are even older than Lord Shiva in the universe. They were the first sons of Brahma. But they always had a body of 5-year-old boys. Bodies never aged. So the four Kumaras, they had this ability to travel anywhere they wanted to go. They went to Vaikuntha. And they went through 6 gates of Vaikuntha, they came to the 7th gate of Vaikuntha. And these two guards, Jai and Vijay, were standing there. And they said, "Stop, where do you think you're going? You're just young boys." He said, "You don't know who we are." He said, "No, you can't come in." And four Kumaras, they became angry. And this actually explains that they didn't become angry because of sense gratification. We talked before, we once gave a lecture here about anger and how it's implicating. And that anger, one form of anger is called Virodha Yukta Krodha, which anger which arises from excessive attachment, where our attachments aren't fulfilled, we get angry. And that kind of angry is very degrading. But the four Kumaras are transcendental personalities. And they became angry. But their anger was for the service of the Lord. Why? Because the only thing they were interested in was the service of the Lord. And these two gatekeepers, Jai and Vijay, were trying to obstruct them from service to the Lord. So, in their anger, they said, "Oh, who are you? Are you imposters posing as devotees? How could such envious people exist in the spiritual world? This is Vaikuntha. There's no envy here. In the spiritual world, everybody just recognizes everyone else as a servant of Krishna. And we're not outsiders. Why do you think we're outsiders?" And therefore they said, "You must be imposters. And therefore, because you're imposters, you merely project your own consciousness on anyone you see.
And therefore you think we're envious, but you're envious. He said, you don't deserve to be here. And he said, you should deserve to be cursed. To go to the place where the envious reside, and where people live with so much enmity. Not here in the spiritual world. You deserve to go in that place where people live in constant enmity. So you'll take birth there. And then when Jaya Vijay heard the curse of these four, they immediately recognized these are sacred persons who made a big mistake. And they fell down at their feet, begged forgiveness. They knew there was no way that they could reverse it, but they said, we ask only one thing. That as we go down, please don't let us forget Krishna. That is all we ask. Don't let us forget. And then the Lord, word went out to the Lord of Vaikuntha. Word went out to the Lord of Vaikuntha that some insult had been committed by his two servants. And the Lord immediately, with the goddess of fortune, went to that place. And he said to the four Kumaras, he said, please forgive me. They're my servants. And they claim to be serving me. And the Lord quoted a very well-known verse. He says, a wrong act committed by a servant leads people in general to blame the master. Just as a spot of white leprosy spoils all the skin on the body. So it's this Lord's statement to the four Kumaras. They claim to be my servant. And therefore, if they do something wrong, I'm at fault, because they're my servant. And therefore, the Lord was apologizing to them. Forgive me, he said. He said, for my devotees, he said, I will cut off my arm for my devotees. And therefore, the Lord said, it is very good that you have cursed them. It is appropriate what you have done. I will not, even though four Kumaras, at one point they actually didn't want to, when they realized that these were devotees, they didn't want to do it. The Supreme Lord Vishnu said, no, you should keep it. They deserve it. He said, but I ask one thing. He said, can they not stay there too long and come back and do their service? He had to ask them. He's the Supreme Lord. But he submitted himself to them and said, is it okay? Can you please approve that they don't stay so long so they can come back and do their service here again? And at that point, the four Kumaras said, oh, yes, we realize we must have made a terrible mistake. And the Lord said, no, you didn't make a mistake. You did the right thing. And therefore, Jayan Vijay, they could have had the choice of take, what was it, 7 births as devotees or 3 births as demons. But they decided to take 3 births so they could come back faster. So their first birth was as sons of Diti. That was their first birth. And who were they? Demons? Yes. Which demons? You know which demons? Sons of Diti. Diti had a lot of sons. All, you know, this Daichas are known as the sons of Diti. Of course, she had 49 sons who were the Maruts, but they all were devotees by Indra's grace. But there are many other Daichas. But the first two, think about it. Who were the first two? Anyone know? We're going to talk more about him today. That's a hint.
Oh,
first
yeah.
Two. Who?
One of them was Haranyakashipu.
Yes. Haranyakashipu. And the other? The other was? No, not Ravana, that was another bird. Hiranyaksha. Hiranyaksha. Hiranyaksha actually was killed by Varaha. And Hiranyakashipu, he was the older brother of Hiranyakashipu. And Hiranyakashipu, after Hiranyaksha was killed, Hiranyakashipu vowed. He became a vowed enemy of Vishnu who killed his brother. And therefore, on that basis, he did what we just talked about. And Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha were the first two births, then it was Ravana and Kumbhakarna, and then Shishupal and Datravakra, during Krishna Lila. These were three appearances. And they were all killed by the Lord, and after they were able to go. So another reason why Hiranyakashipu was killed by Lord Srinagadev was to speed up the process. Because they didn't want to stay forever in the material world. And Hiranyakashipu got a benediction and he couldn't be killed by anyone. How is he going to go back? He was never killed. And therefore, Lord Nrisingadev, another reason why he appeared as Nrisingadev was to serve his devotees, Jaya and Vijaya, who wanted to get back to their service in Vaikuntha. Another one of his reasons. So that's protect devotee Prahlad, protect the demigods, Indra, who've been kicked out of the heavenly planets, to serve Jai and Vijay by accelerating their return to Vaikuntha. In addition, the Lord felt obliged to fulfill the words of several of his devotees. Now this is a very important point, because Piyari? What time am I supposed to stop?
Anytime.
I will accelerate. We'll accelerate the reasons for his appearance so that Gornatai can appear. We don't want to keep him waiting either. And so the feast can appear. We don't want to keep you waiting if you've been fasting today. But there are many other reasons. I still haven't gotten to them all yet. So another thing is that the Lord does is he always upholds the statements of his devotees. Very famous statement. Bhagavad Gita. Kantaya pati janihi nami bhakti pranashati. Krishna says to Arjuna, Arjuna, you declare it boldly that my devotees never vanquished. Now why did he tell Arjuna to declare it? Because Krishna is saying, if I declare it, some people might not believe me. Because sometimes I even break my own promise. Which it is sometimes, like picking up weapons in the battlefield to attack. He said he would take no weapon in the battlefield, but still he chased after Bhishma Dev with a weapon in hand. He uses a chariot wheel as a weapon as he's chasing Arjuna to kill him. And Arjuna, that very famous painting, a very famous painting of Krishna coming after Arjuna with a chariot wheel in his hand. You see Arjuna holding on to Krishna by the waist. He's being dragged by Krishna. He's saying, no, Krishna, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't break your vow for me. That's what Arjuna is saying. Don't break your vow for me. I'm not worth it. Another example of humility in the Pandavas. You made a vow. Don't break it for me. But still, Krishna did it. So Krishna says, sometimes I may make a vow and I may break it. People won't accept it. But therefore you say it, Arjuna, that my devotee is never vanquished, because if you say it, everyone will have to accept it. Because whatever my devotee says, I will always protect the words of my devotee. That much Krishna will never breach. Never breach. If my devotee makes a statement, Krishna, whatever will happen, he will protect the words of his devotee. So therefore, many devotees made many statements in relationship to this event. And Krishna had to protect those statements. Of course, Lord Nishikadev had to protect those statements. So he says that in addition, the Lord felt obliged to fulfill the words of several of his devotees. Brahma had predicted the Supreme Lord's appearance as Nisringa. Of course, Lord Brahma predicted it by giving the benediction to Hiranyakashipu. Brahma's sons, the four Kumaras, had predicted the Lord's killing of Hiranyakashipu. We talked about that. Hiranyakashipu himself, who was an incarnation of Lord Narayana's doorkeeper, Jaya, had also made statements that the Lord had to make true. Even statements made by Hiranyakashipu, because he's actually Jaya, his devotee. Hiranyakashipu made a statement, but to Prahlad, he said something like to the effect, I think it's mentioned in here, he said, your Lord will have to kill me to stop me. So, the Lord protected that sleep. He also made statements that the Lord had to make. And Narada and Prahlad's predictions also needed to be realized. Narada Muni also made a statement. Narada Muni made a statement about Prahlad. When Hiranyakashipu was performing these austerities, the demigods wanted to take advantage. Hiranyakashipu was out of the picture. For however long it was, I can't remember, sorry, 100 years, celestial years, something like that. But he was out of the picture. Completely. So the demigods were thinking, let's go attack the demons. Hiranyakashipu isn't around to protect them. So the demigods, they went to where all the demons had usurped the demigod's property in Indra's planet, Indra's palace, and other heavenly planets that they had occupied. Because while Hiranyakashipu was in charge, he just sent all the demons everywhere. Said, and that's how he subjugated all the demigods throughout the universe. So the demigods took advantage of the fact that Hiranyakashipu was doing his austerities. And one of the things Indra did, one of the first things he did, is he went to Kayadu, who was Hiranyakashipu's wife, and who was pregnant. Who was she pregnant with? Yes.
Prahlad.
And why? Why did he go? Yes, he did that. But there was another reason why he went there. That was Narada Muni. We're talking about Indra. Why did Indra go? Indra was afraid. You know, that we've lost everything and who knows how long it's going to be out of our grips. We've got to get everything back. Let's try to get it all back while Hiranyakashipu is performing his austerities. So who did he see as the biggest threat? Who was the biggest threat?
He thought that Prahlad might be a demon, yeah, like his father.
That's right. Because Prahlad was the son of Hiranyakashipu. And he was in Kayadu's womb. So Indra came and he wanted to kill Prahlad. Because he thought, if this Prahlad takes his birth while Hiranyakashipu's, then he'll just raise havoc like his father. And he'll be just like his father. He may be just as powerful as his father. So he went to that place to kill. And Narada Muni, in fact, the Bhagavatam states, Narada Muni, just at that particular point in time, he didn't have anything else to do. So he happened to show up there, right at that spot, at that moment. Because that's how Narada Muni, you know, moves. You know, he can go anywhere whenever there's a good reason for it. So he felt there was a good reason for it. So he immediately went to that place and said to Indra, what are you doing? You can't do this. And Indra said, don't you realize who's in the womb of this woman? It's a demon. He needs to be killed. How can you stop me from that? And Narayana Muni said, no, you don't realize the person who's in the womb of this woman. He's a great devotee. He's not a demon. And not only he said that, he said, but even if you wanted to, you couldn't kill him. He cannot be killed by you. So Narayana Muni made that statement. And because he made that statement, Lord Shringadev had to protect that statement too. As much as his father wanted to kill him, made so many attempts to kill Prahlad. All those throwing him off a mountain, throwing him in burning oil, having him pierced.
Maybe the statement was a little different, but you just said that Indra couldn't kill him. You didn't say anything about an Anakasa Pupa.
Yeah, but the point is he couldn't kill him.
No one could kill him.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, but we're talking about Indra. But the point was he couldn't kill him. It means Indra couldn't kill him either, even though Hiranyakashipu tried to kill him. Indra couldn't be successful either. And that, therefore, to protect that statement made by Narayana Muni, Lord Shringadeva also had to appear. Because that, and he didn't appear, Lord Shringadeva, my point was, he didn't appear to protect Prahlad from Indra, he appeared to protect Prahlad from Hiranyakashipu. And Narayana Muni made a statement that no one's going to be able to kill him. So that statement was also protected. So a detailed description of how Lord Nrisimha had to fulfill the words of his various devotees is found in Srila Sridhar Swami's commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam. And that was the verse, the first verse that we read from the Bhagavatam. 7:8:17. A verse beginning Satyam Vedatum Nijibhuti Pashitam. To make true what was spoken by his servants. When Hiranyakashipu asked Prahlad whether his Lord Vishnu was also present in the pillar of the palace, Prahlad answered, yes, of course, he's present everywhere. Lord Nrisimhadeva emerged from the pillar to fulfill this statement of Prahlad's. Another statement he had to appear. Yes. Hiranyakashipu said, okay, is your Lord in this pillar? And Prahlad said, yeah. He's there, sure. Of course, Hiranyakashipu didn't believe it. I can't remember. I never hear, no, never mind. Okay, I can't cite the source, so I better not quote it. Lord Nrisimhadeva emerged from the pillar to fulfill the statement of Prahlad's and Prahlad's previous statement that the Lord is also present in the varieties of material creations and in the material elements. The personality of God had burst forth from the pillar in the terrifying form of Nrisimha to dispatch Hiranyakashipu quickly and thus fulfill the request of the four Kumaras that Jaya and Vijaya be reinstated in their positions by Kuntha after only three births in the material world.
I thought Hiranyakashipu was off doing an austerity. Should I miss that he's showing up to the scene?
No, this is after he performed his finished performance of austerities. He got a benediction from Lord Brahma, and then he captured all strategically all the heavenly planets and all the planets throughout the universe, and he was raising havoc. And many other things happened in the interim also. We definitely didn't have time to mention more about Balaji, his son, who was going to school and showing devotional sentiments right from his birth because he had heard Srimad Bhagavatam while he was in the womb of his mother, Kayadu. Because when Kayadu was taken, attempt was made by Indra to kill Prahlad within the womb. Narada said, no, you can't. And Narada then took Kayadu to his ashram. And while at the ashram, Narada Muni was speaking Srimad Bhagavatam the whole time. Kayadu to hear, and Narada, and Balad, who was within the womb of Kayadu. So he heard Srimad Bhagavatam right within the womb, remembered everything that he heard in the womb, and therefore, right from his very birth, displayed all devotional sentiments. And because he displayed such devotional sentiments, Hiranyakashipu considered him to be a friend of the enemy. And because he was a friend of the enemy, he was an enemy. And And therefore he considers his own son an enemy. And therefore he made every attempt to rectify him at first by sending him off to school with Sundar and Mahaka so he could be taught diplomacy and how to become a good demon. But Balad Maharaj wasn't interested and didn't submit to the teachings of Sundar and Mahaka. And then Bhishikhu started to become very resistant to Prahlad's devotional tendencies and tried to kill him. And then, of course, sometimes I often tell in this connection, I think I've told it before, but I told the story about the court case in Boston. I'll make the story short, then we can end. I don't want to keep everybody. What time's dusk?
Well, we're not going to take till way after dusk, I can tell you that. We have to have RT, Abhishek.
Oh, Abhishek, too. Oh. That's what you get for not telling me when I'm supposed to start. I won't tell the story. I don't want to get in trouble.
Tell it in a few sentences, one or two sentences.
No, it's not possible to tell one or two sentences.
It's a good story.
Huh?
It's a good story.
You heard it?
The story in Boston,
I'll tell it really fast. There was a court case in Boston, okay, many years ago. And in that court case was the litigants were, one of them was a girl who had lived in the temple when she was very young. And she tried to prove that her life was damaged by living in the temple and by following the practices of Krishna consciousness. And she took she named Srila Prabhupada, took the case to Prabhupada and then to Boston Temple, and then she tried to include so many other temples. Of course, this happened in, I think it was, first took the case. The case to court in 1977, and shortly after Prabhupada had departed, and therefore Prabhupada was removed from the court case, and the only temple that was left was the Boston Temple. And because I was a leader in the temple at the time, I was the one who had to go to speak in court. So during the testimony, during the examination by the prosecuting attorney, I was sitting in the jury trial, 10 people, Mr. and Mrs., you know, modern day America. We're all sitting in the jury box. And the prosecuting attorney says to me, he said many things to me, but in the course of inquiry, of examining me, he said, "Mr. Swami," and he held up a picture of Lord Nishadev. He said, "Mr. Swami, who is this?" And I was told by our attorney, he said, don't let him get your goat. Stay cool. He's going to try to make you, you know. And he said, "Don't forget you're in front of a jury. They're going to judge the way you are in front of a jury." And so he said, "Just answer his questions." And he said, "And then on cross-examination, I'll turn everything around." So he said, "Mr. Swami, who is this?" So I said, "That's Nrisimhadev." "Oh, who is Nrisimhadev?" "He's the incarnation of the Supreme Lord." "Oh, he's your God?" "Well, yes, he's one of the features of the Supreme Lord. He's your God. Tell me, Mr. Swami, what's that around his neck?" "Those are intestines." "Intestines?" He's very, I mean, I'm not This is exactly how it was. Intestines. Whose intestines are they? I said, Hiranyakashipu. Oh, who is Hiranyakashipu? I said, well, he was a very demoniac person. Oh, I see. And who's this little boy? There's this picture on the altar. There was a picture of this Vishakadeva with intestines and Hiranyakashipu and Prahladji holding a garland. So who's this little boy? His name is Prahlad. Oh, Prahlad. What's the relationship between this little boy and the man that's on his lap? I said, well, that's his father. Oh, it's his father! It's his father! I said, yes. Tell me, Mr. Swami, why is this boy smiling? Because he's happy. Oh, he's happy! He's happy to see his father killed! Is that what you want to say, Mr. Swami? So I said, no, that's what you're saying. You said he's happy his father's being killed. I said, no, he's happy because he's seeing his Lord. And so the whole court case, this part of the court case, is the prosecuting attorney was trying to show the jury that we worship a God who's very happy to see that the children kill their parents. Because she was a young girl. This girl was a young girl. She joined. And he's thinking that he's trying to prove how her life is destroyed because she wouldn't submit to the doctrine which teaches that a child should kill her parents. And we believe this. I mean, fortunately, the case was thrown out of court when the state Supreme Court actually got the stack of papers and read it. We were going to an appellate court. The appellate court, state court, actually said, no, we want this in our hands. And they read through the whole documents. And they said, we will not allow such a trial in the state of Massachusetts. And they threw out all these parts of the court case. They said, we can't put religion on trial in our state. Of course, Massachusetts is famous for the witch trials. So it was all turned around. But the irony is that after my examination, our attorney was Balavanta, a devotee. And Balavanta was going to cross-examine me. And the prosecuting attorney went to the judge. They had a sidebar. They talked to the judge. And he convinced the judge in a sidebar that you can't let this attorney cross-examine him because he's a GBC. And because he's a GBC, the witness, out of fear, will say whatever he wants him to say and won't tell the truth. So Balavanta was thrown out of the tribe by the judge at that time. And I couldn't be cross-examined. Anyways, this is how the materialists think. They don't understand the purpose of the Supreme Court. It's very difficult to understand the purpose of the Supreme Court. And how whatever the Supreme Lord does is ultimately for the benefit of all recipients. Yes, he protects his devotee. Yes, he kills the demons, but he accelerates the return to the spiritual world. And even sometimes the Lord kills the demons, and ultimately they get liberation. And without understanding the purpose of the Supreme Lord, all these activities will remain a complete mystery. And the funny part about it, one last thing, is that during the break, the recess after Balavanta was thrown out of the courtroom, we had to figure out how to get another attorney to come and take over. So we had a break, and I decided to go into the library. And the right next to the courthouse was in the Norfolk County Courthouse. It was a big library. I went into the library, and somehow I went into this children's section, and I pulled out this book, and the book was all about children's stories. And one of the stories in the book was about Lord Nisheng and David. I wanted to take it back to the courtroom, but they wouldn't allow it. Anyways, such are the pastimes of the Supreme Lord. Fulfills many purposes. There's a lot more to this purport, but I won't be able to finish it. But I think we've had a little bit of an understanding from this purport of the many, many reasons or purposes which are fulfilled by the appearance of Lord Nisheng. And all of these and more can be read in Vihabhagavatamrita. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna.